Hello, and welcome to Out in the Bay, our weekly show about gay life from San Francisco. I'm Marilyn Pittman. Lots of business books have been written about getting to the top of the corporate ladder, about the path to success in business. But what if you're gay doing it? Can you be out? Should you stay in? What companies and cities and states is it okay to be out at work in? The United States still has no national policy protecting LGBT people in the workplace. It's still legal in 29 states to discriminate based on sexual orientation, and in 34 states to do so based on gender identity. What are the obstacles LGBT people face in reaching the pinnacles of their careers? How does being in the closet at the top of a company affect your health and well-being? How does being out maybe help it? My guest is the founder of Out and Equal Workplace Advocates here in San Francisco and the editor of Out and Equal at Work, From the Closet to the Corner Office, an anthology of stories from top corporate leaders. Selise Berry, welcome to Out in the Bay.
Thanks, Marilyn. I'm happy to be here.
Great to have you here. And you're a hero.
Thank you.
You started this organization 16 years ago all by your lonesome self. You did it alone for 4 years. You finally got a part-time assistant. Now you have 20 employees, and you're doing work all across the world at helping corporations open up, make fair workplaces. Right?
It's true.
That's an amazing story.
Thank you.
You're a San Francisco hero.
It's very exciting.
And where else but San Francisco could that be?
That's right.
Started out.
That's right.
Right? But you weren't from San Francisco. You're from Oklahoma.
Right.
And you moved here to go to seminary school. And then what happened is that your story is one in the anthology. And what happened was you finally got through all that. You finally discovered you were lesbian in Boston. And then they wouldn't ordain you.
Right.
The Presbyterian Church, even though you were a lesbian.
That's right. Yeah, I put a lot of time and energy. I was really attracted to going to seminary. Early on, I was living in Dallas, Texas, teaching school, and my passion was really around social justice work, around creating community. And the people that were doing that kind of work in Texas were all church leaders. So
sure.
I decided it was to go to seminary. And as you said, the very first month in seminary, I realized two very important things. One is that I finally came out to myself as a lesbian. I certainly had clues looking back, but I just didn't really put it all together. So I came out and at the very same time learned that the Presbyterian Church will not ordain out lesbians or gay men, bisexual or transgender people. So it was a little bit of a slap in the face and made me take a second look at my career. But I decided to go ahead and finish my seminary degree. And then, you know, after graduation, spent some very difficult months, actually a couple years, trying to decide what to do with my life.
Yeah, and you had this degree for something you wanted to become, and you couldn't become it because you were gay.
Exactly.
That's the only reason you couldn't become it.
Right. And I certainly knew all my colleagues in seminary and thought, really? Some of them were right out of college and really had no life experience. And I felt like, you know, I had brought 10 years of life experience teaching school, was a guidance counselor prior to going to seminary. So I felt like I offered a lot. And yet, because of who I loved, I wasn't able to serve and to pursue the career that I knew that I wanted to pursue.
So different people have different reactions to that form of discrimination, anger, pain. Which of those two was more operative for you?
I was pretty pissed off for quite a while, and it was also a very painful experience. And at a certain point, you know, I just thought, I can just kind of mope around for the rest of my life, or, you know, get up, brush myself off, and decide to make the world a better place, which is what I went to seminary to do in the first place. And so,
right, so you still have the same values and the same motivation, but you
exactly.
had to forge your own path.
Right, and what better organization to start than to start an organization committed to be able to do whatever we want to do, regardless of who we love.
Well, and it makes perfect sense, doesn't it, to be Selise Berry and have that happen to you, and then to start Out and Equal. Outandequal.org. You can find it at outandequal.org. You're listening to Out in the Bay. I'm Marilyn Pittman. My guest is Selyse Berry from Out and Org. Out and Org? Out and Equal.
Out and Equal. My first organization was called SLETS, which was Seminary Lesbians Under Theological Stress, which was a lot of fun, as
was that
you can
a comedy
imagine.
Group? Was it a punk rock band?
What? A lot of lesbians over
Wait
at the
a minute.
Graduate
what
Theological
for?
Union. Seminary Lesbians Under Theological Stress.
And this was a reaction to this ridiculous discrimination,
exactly.
bigotry against you.
Right.
So you formed a little bit of a radical feminist, lesbian feminist organization.
Fun crowd.
And what year was that, can I ask?
That was 91.
91.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's the height of the AIDS crisis.
Right, right.
And so being gay is not okay. Just for those of you who don't remember that or don't know that, you un-gays.
Right.
But it wasn't. It was a difficult time to be gay, and we were acting up, and we were angry and dying, and our men were, and we still didn't even see lesbians anywhere. I mean, I don't even know Howard Stern had lesbians by then. I think it took a few more years after that.
Well, didn't right.
He helped the cause, don't you remember?
Right.
And Phil Donahue and, you know, having lesbians on the TV. I mean,
right.
that was a big thing back then, back in the early 90s. That was just beginning. And so from there, though, you started this organization 16 years ago. So that's a little bit later than 91. And you started it by yourself, and you said, I'm going to develop an advocacy program.
Actually, yeah, I was hired by United Way of the Bay Area to run the Building Bridges program, and it was started to offer LGBT diversity training to nonprofits, and I felt like if we were going to be sustain this kind of program, we really needed to offer it to businesses. So I started bringing together people that were already doing kind of leadership development, working with employee resource groups in the Bay Area among progressive companies. And over the course of 2 years, it took 2 years to get Out and Equal off the ground. We were Pride Collaborative, and we brought together colleagues and Agog and Progress, and over a period of time, eventually first became Pride Collaborative, and then finally became Out and Equal Workplace Advocates. Mm-hmm. And for the first 4 or 5 years, we were a project of United Way of the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. They were extremely supportive of our work. And again, United Way was the first United Way in the country to expect people that got funding from them to sign a non-discrimination policy that included sexual orientation, which meant that they were the first United Way to no longer fund the Boy Scouts, which was, you know, what they were known for many years.
But well, that gets ink. That gets press.
Yeah, exactly.
Press.
It was a very courageous stance.
Well, and also talking about diversity training, that was a new idea back in the 90s, isn't
right.
it? Even HR, you didn't even have HR until probably the 90s. I can't remember, maybe the 80s. But human resources, all those things. Diversity training?
Right.
You know,
and there were diversity training programs, but the people were very articulate around gender issues and race issues, but they could not say the word lesbian or gay, you know. So that's why we came in with Building Bridges to offer them that program.
Yes, I remember actually doing comedy about in the early 90s about people had to say gay, and when we changed it to the gay and lesbian instead of gay,
uh-huh.
and we added lesbian, and then you had people like Pat Buchanan having to say lesbian. I used to make fun of that. Say it, Pat, say it. You know,
right, right.
Very fun to have that word now be said. It was
right.
just so radical at the time anyway. Now, of course, we take it for granted. The book is a series of stories by various business leaders. And these are some of these people are vice presidents. They're head of global strategy for their corporations. They're multinational Fortune 500 companies. And so these are very successful people who have struggled, some of them, with how to come out in the workplace, how to be out, and some of them have gone on to lead the LGBT workplace groups at their companies. What are some of the more, what strikes you when you think about this book that you edited as something more, one of the more painful or more dramatic stories in it?
Wow. You know, so many of the people that tell their story, many of them grew up in small towns.
As you did.
As I did in Oklahoma. And Louise Young grew up in Oklahoma as well. And she was fired when she was a professor at her alma mater, gotten a PhD and was teaching. And somebody saw them, she and her partner, at a gay bar. And the next day she got the pink slip. So that was, yeah. And
that's before HR. That's the 70s, I believe, her story.
Exactly, yeah. Right. George Caligridis, who's Louise was at, totally blanking. But George Caligridis is the president of Disney World, and he started as a busboy at Disney World at many years ago in Orlando, and has been very successful. Obviously, he was the president of Disneyland for a number of years, and now Disney World. And when he in middle, kind of midpoint in his career, that he was really advocating for gay days. It was controversial in the beginning at Disney, and they were having a conversation about that, and it was not much. It was not long after that conversation where he was outed by another employee who sent information about where his office was to a right-wing organization, and they, you know, had the sheriff in. But the president, the CEO, came to him and said, you know, first of all, you need to know we have your back. We do not tolerate this. We've fired the employee that has outed you, and you know, we support you 100%. And those are the kind of, you know, successful parts of the story that allow people, you know, the realization that you really can come out and still be successful. And guess what? You're putting your time and energy into your job and not hiding who you are, which makes you much more successful.
It's hard on your immune system.
Absolutely.
And your psychological well-being and everything, your family life.
Right.
Pretty much everything. So, but I would say that it's Disney, and that's an entertainment company. On the other hand, you have lots of people from, you know, Clorox and IBM and different other, Merck, corporate, other kinds of things. Is it, maybe it was easier for him in an entertainment company like Disney?
Where they are already talking about gay days.
Well, they're dealing with artists.
Yeah. But then it's also such a huge family organization, right? So
that's true.
You've got that kind of juxtaposition between family and kind of all the artists, because obviously if the LGBT people left Disney, it would probably fall apart. But that's true of, you know, what, the Catholic Church and lots of other organizations, too.
Now, Tom Johnson, in your book From Clorox, writes, about 1988, before domestic partnership was a concept, before openly gay people served in upper management, he writes that he stifled his creativity in meetings because he didn't want anybody to think he was gay. And what a cost is that to a company, to stifle your creativity?
Right. He just remembers all these opportunities he had where people kept talking about, let's think outside the box. And as soon as he'd had this great idea, he had to really force himself to kind of put himself on mute, because he knew that if he kind of came out with this idea that people would go, oh, he's gay.
That's a gay idea.
That's a total gay idea if you're being creative. So, yeah, it's again, it's like really, you know, does not help move things forward. In fact, it stifles the creativity.
You're listening to Out in the Bay. I'm Marilyn Pittman. My guest is Celise Berry, the founder of Out and Equal Workplace Advocates here in San Francisco. She edited the anthology Out and Equal at Work, From the Closet to the Corner Office. You can find out more at outandequal.org. That's outandequal.org. In the book, Claudia Brind-Woody, who's VP and Managing Director for IBM Global Intellectual Property and Technology Licensing. Wow, what a title. Well, she says in the 50s, IBM wouldn't build plants in states with segregation laws, and that changed the laws in a couple of states over the period of 3 years. And in the 80s, they started providing domestic partnership benefits. So it was an 80s idea. And so IBM has been ahead of the curve. Even in the Middle East, she writes, and I'll read this little bit from the book. We prefer not to walk away from employees or clients, and we always try to educate first. A great example of this occurred when we first opened our offices in the Middle East. We refused to alter our corporate non-discrimination policy and insisted on having the whole policy available on the Internet, internally and externally, including the sexual orientation and gender identity provisions. In one country, we had to take a stand to allow men and women to work at the same conference table without a glass wall separating them. We made it clear, we respect your culture, but within IBM walls, our male and female employees need to be able to work together. And I thought that was remarkable and interesting because, you know, we live in San Francisco. We take some of our freedoms for granted as gay people. It's different in different states. As I mentioned in the beginning of the program, 29 states don't, you know, in 29 states you can get fired for being gay.
Right.
In 34, if you're transgendered. And so, but this is America. We're leading the way, I suppose, on a lot of this. I know some parts of Europe are as well. But the Middle East, mm-hmm. and I was just curious if you could fill us in with anything that's on the forefront of working with Europe and other parts of the world.
Yeah, you know, we started this work, obviously, here in the San Francisco Bay Area, but it became clear that the companies that we were working with are obviously have sites all over the country, and we've became a national organization early on in our tenure. And it's just been the last three or four years that we've recognized that so many of these companies are also obviously multinational companies and have really taken the step to put a stake in the ground and say that we really are working internationally. We had our first global conference last July and brought together, in fact, every one of our annual Out and Equal Workplace Summits, we have about 30 countries represented, and we had about 35 at our first global conference in London. It was during World Pride. But we started, been very proactive, and we started a global advisory committee, which Claudia is the chair of. And she, you know, I think we're all very committed, and certainly with her legacy at IBM, are committed to having these companies really have an impact on parts of the world where we can still be imprisoned, even put to death, simply because we're gay or lesbian, bisexual
or transgender.
Exactly. Right. So, you know, when a company is trying to have an impact and moving into a certain geography, there are ways to have those conversations and just say, you know, look, we would come in here and really offer economic, opportunities for the people in your community and your country, but we're not coming here because of these laws.
Right. And which is what IBM did in the 50s in regards to segregation laws in Kentucky and North Carolina. I believe those were the two states. And within 3 years, those states wanting those jobs, wanting the economic engine that IBM was going to provide with those plants, within 3 years, those laws changed.
That's
and
right.
They were able to start doing business there. And it's a similar sort of idea.
Mm-hmm.
Not segregation, but LGBTQI rights,
mm-hmm.
Equal rights.
Exactly.
Interesting. Well, that's really you're sort of on the front lines then in some sense with this global thing kind of expanding. Is that kind of what you're doing with your organization, is letting that outreach start to really get more tentacles and do more in more places?
Yeah, because, I mean, sir, obviously there's still so much work to be done in these United States. We have built a lot of momentum and are moving things forward, but feel like, you know, even in a place like Spain where people can get legally married, still we hear that so many people are not out at work. And so trying to work with the companies themselves, and what we encourage the companies to do is to roll their LGBT-friendly policies, their domestic partner benefits, or they're putting sexual orientation and gender identity in their EEO policies, to roll those policies out globally so that anyone in, you know, everywhere from Tennessee to Oklahoma to Indonesia to, you know, India and China, they all have the same policies. So regardless of what the government says and what the government policy is, they know that they can come out.
If you
want
to do business with American businesses, this is what it's going to require.
Right.
God, I love that. I mean, isn't that so? It's like spreading democracy without war, obviously, and just through kind of common sense. Like, this is how we do business. This is how we're going to do business in your country, because this is how we do business in America.
Exactly. These are our expectations, and this is, you know, kind of our bottom line.
Wow, that's such a way to shift the culture.
Yeah,
and shift
exciting.
Perception. And it really is exciting. I mean, that's one of the things I found the most. I wanted to find out more about that from you. I want to have a little bit of fun. Well, it's not really that fun because it's painful, but then, you know, pain can be fun. I don't know. I mean, you know, whenever something is bad, it can be can have a joke at the end of it to help us all. Dr. Louise Young, she's a senior software engineer at Raytheon in the Dallas area. She's the founder of the LGBT group there, and she writes about a time in the 1970s in Denver with her partner. And I wanted to just quickly read that, if you don't mind. Vivian was the school nurse at the Cerebral Palsy Center in Denver. She was an extremely popular and valued member of the staff. I received a job offer to teach at Southern Illinois University. I traveled there to make arrangements, but eventually declined the job. Meanwhile, Vivian had given her notice at the Cerebral Palsy Center. The head of the center asked why she was leaving, and she said, "Well, I guess you know, Louise and I are together. We're moving to Edwardsville, Illinois for her teaching job." He wished Vivian good luck. A week later, after I turned down the teaching job in Illinois, Vivian returned to the Cerebral Palsy Center to ask for her job back. Although the center had not hired another school nurse, they refused to rehire her. Vivian asked why they would not rehire her, and the head of the organization very clearly said, "Because you are a lesbian." "Well, I was a lesbian last week, and you cried when I left," Vivian replied in shock. "Yes, but now we know that you're a lesbian, and you cannot work here," he responded. And this is why people stay in the closet. Even if people think they're gay and they know they're gay, if you say it, then it changes everything.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is back in the 70s, but I'm sure this kind of thing still happens in places in this country, whether they're small towns or backward states.
Or progressive places like San Francisco. People are still in the closet.
People are still in the closet in San Francisco?
They are, yeah. It's unfortunate.
Let's get them.
But it's true. It's very sad. And obviously, age is a little... makes a difference.
What do you mean by that?
It's typically the boomers that feel like they have to stay in the closet in order to be successful. And younger people are like, really?
Why are you in the closet?
Yeah.
Because they didn't live through the 50s and 60s, please.
Right. And,
70s.
Mean, I think those of us that are out and start organizations like Out and Equal, we're seen as being kind of judgmental about people who are closeted. And I wouldn't go that far. I do encourage people to come out, not because I think it's a good idea, but because their life is going to be so much easier on so many levels, and they just don't know that.
But don't you also think that that revolution happens on an individual basis, and that each person that comes out, there's a lot of power and energy in that?
Absolutely.
Even though there's sadness and destruction and things could go wrong, it shifts consciousness. I remember during AIDS, just coming out was the biggest. I mean, that's when... it became a thing is, are you going to out somebody? And
right.
And there was a lot of anger about people who were in the closet. And I'm sure people in the closet still feel afraid. I know Ellen DeGeneres felt afraid when she would perform because there was always these lesbians screaming and yelling. And she was so afraid that somebody was going to go, "You're a lesbian," or something. And so that's one of the reasons she finally came out.
Right. Right.
Because she was afraid of being outed.
Right. And I remember when I was in seminary and still in the closet and would go to events and very sheepishly, go to an LGBT event where they'd say, come out. And I was like, are you kidding me? You have no idea what my life is like. And so I understand that. I mean,
sure.
I definitely don't out people or try and encourage them other than saying, for their own peace of mind and their own health, that would be a good path to take.
But it is one of the building blocks, one of the most important building blocks we have to expanding consciousness and getting equal rights.
Exactly.
To ending workplace discrimination, for example, because that's what you're focused on.
Right, exactly. And people get to know, Maria or Louise or Claudia or Julie or any number of people, Bobby, George, Tom, and they, and they're a fabulous IT person, or they're a fabulous marketing person, or they're a fabulous vice president. And oh, by the way, they happen to be gay or lesbian or bisexual or transgender. And it's not this like, oh my God, that's all I know about this person. They're very successful. And oh, by the way, and it just changes the dynamic of the friendship, of the collegiality that they experience. And they feel like they get to know this person in a whole different way. Mm-hmm. And it is changing the world.
Let's talk about something else, someone else in your book, Christy Hardwick. I want you to tell me more about meeting Christy Hardwick, because I know that that was a powerful connection for you. She's a longtime corporate exec and workplace advocate. Just tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, Christy was at the time at a Silicon Valley organization, and I went there to meet with folks to talk about Out and Equal. It was just me at the time, and I think I was, you know, letting people know about the Out and Equal Workplace Summit. And
it was in the 90s.
Yeah,
yes.
Drumming up sponsorship dollars, as I spent a lot of time doing. Met Christy, and of course, immediately, I assumed that she was just some straight, you know, pretty woman. And then found out she was like the president of the board of GLSEN. I was like, wait.
So tell people what GLSEN is.
GLSEN.
Gay and
Lesbian Straight
Education
Network.
Yes. Right.
And I was like, wow, are you an ally? And she finally, you know, came out. And so we started our, you know, our kind of friendship then. And then years later, she was a facilitator for a group of national LGBT executive directors. And I then said, you've got to come and work with me to start an executive forum for out LGBT executives, because what we kept hearing from, we work a lot with LGBT employees and LGBT employee resource groups in large companies. And many of the people say, you know, as soon as somebody comes out
At the top.
As soon as somebody kind of gets promoted, they go back in the closet. And they saw that time and time again. And everybody knows, you know, that they're
gay, but
part of the family, but they're in the closet. And so we thought, well, why don't we bring them all together and create community, which is what we do at Out and Equal, and kind of have a little peer pressure that why not, you know, come back out of the closet? Why not do work? Because these are decision makers.
And so they're role models to the people below them in the corporate structure.
Exactly. So we've started that, and Christy has been very instrumental in helping kind of create the curriculum for the executive forum. And in fact, it's happening next week here in San Francisco, and it's so she'll be here. I think the seventh year in a row that we've brought together out LGBT executives, and now we bring together emerging executives as well. And then we have a big momentum and evening dinner on the 25th of April, which
next
is
week.
Very exciting.
Let me ask you this one last question. Do you run into opposition where people don't want to, don't make me be out, don't, I don't want to talk about, you know, don't respond, I'm not dealing with you, don't even email me, I don't want to hear, I'm not going to be part of your forum, just, what kind of resistance do you get from top corporate people? Any?
We certainly, over the years, I've certainly had that kind of reaction of people with internalized homophobia. I've also led LGBT diversity training where, there are people at the back of the room with their arms folded and their Bible in their lap, just making a very clear statement. And that's, you know, it doesn't really surprise me. But what really has surprised me to look back over, 16 years and recognize just how many people are very embracing and are actually quite thrilled with the diversity that comes from people being out, bringing all of who they are to work every day.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Sleasberry.
Thank you, Marilyn.
What a pleasure to get to know you and to celebrate your work here on Out in the Bay. I really appreciate you coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Sleasberry is the founder of Out and Equal Workplace Advocates here in San Francisco. She edited the anthology Out and Equal at Work, From the Closet to the Corner Office. You can find out more. Please go to outandequal.org, outandequal.org. Support them because they're doing amazing work. You've been listening to Out in the Bay, a weekly show about gay life from San Francisco. Our show streams and is on the air every Thursday at 7 p.m., and then we archive it at outinthebay.com for podcasts. You can get us on your phone, too. Just go to outinthebay.com and download the Stitcher app. You can also check out our Playing Favorites page on our website. We put up a dozen of our best shows over the last 8 years. Ang Lee, Sylvester, John Waters. Make a donation. It's tax deductible, and it keeps us on the air. Did you hear me? Do it. Out in the Bay is supported in part by the Bar Association of San Francisco's Lawyer Referral and Information Service, providing legal referrals in over 100 areas of the law, including those most relevant to the LGBT community. Information online at sfbar.org, L-R-I-S, sfbar.org/LRIS, or by phone, 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. Hey, write us with your comments. My email is marilyn@outinthebay.com. Eric's is eric@outofthebay.com. Thanks to the staff and management of KLW. Eric Jansen is our engineer tonight. Thanks, Eric. Out of the Bay is produced by Eric and me. I'm Marilyn Pittman. Thanks for joining me.